Now, how do we do this again? Goodbye and leave. It's no, that's not it. Go away and piss. No, that's not right, is it? Hello, that's it. And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 497. This is how long it's been. I can't remember numbers. My name is James Gilmore. You might remember me from such shows as the Pocket Gamer Podcast, that podcast people used to download back in the day when it ran. And I am joined today by another member of the old guard from the show. It's Matthew Ford.
Hello, sir. It has been a while.
It's been far too long. So I realize this has been a little bit stop-start, and we kick off with our notorious excuses. But the last, let's say, 5 weeks have been a bit of a whirlwind for everybody. We've had Matthew, who's been out in Australia for a fortnight, doing work things, then fun things, then illness things.
Pretty much.
That sums it all up. We've had myself being off for a period holiday-wise, then in Jordan, which I've just come back from this week. We were doing the first ever Pocket Gamer Connects in Jordan, which was a great show and completely different part of the world for us to visit. And it was wonderful. Then I got spectacularly ill as well afterwards. So if this is a bit low energy and I sound a bit sketchy, that's why. And so as a result of all of this, the show hasn't really happened. Also, Dan loves doing the podcast, but has to run the entire website. So trying to find a date when one of us isn't off or ill or in another country has been a bit tricky recently. So we've been looking into ways of addressing this to make sure that this happens back in its usual regular weekly way. And we've got a few plans in place, and hopefully we'll be back to once a week as per usual for the rest of the year. There's no more shows. We've done it. Five shows. Five Pocket Gamer Connects this year. First time we've ever done that. Three new countries. And it's all finished. And it's been a great time. But I'm so pleased it's all done. Oh, God.
Until it starts again next
year. No, that's it. We're done. We're not doing any more. I can't do this. But yeah, Pocket Gamer Connects in London, January 2020. Look forward to that. So what that means is that we all have an awful lot to catch up on. I've wandered through the past month or so's news and releases and reviews and picked what I think are the most interesting little tidbits. Matthew's obviously been playing games as well. I've been playing some bits and pieces. We're going to fill you in. It's going to be a nice time. If you're listening to this, thank you so much for sticking with us, because we do appreciate it. You know,
we appreciate you.
Oh, bless. No, you, Matthew.
No, you.
Because, like, no joke, this isn't a case of, like, we don't want to do it and we sack it off. This is one of the funnest bits and always has been of the job for me.
100% same.
These chats. So it's, I'm very frustrated when we can't do it. So glad to be back. Let's get this thing done. First bit of news this week is slightly self-serving, but it means you get to have your voice on the current state of mobile gaming. The Pocket Gamers People Choice Award 2020, the nominations are open. Wang on over to pg.co.uk, pg.com, all of the URLs, we own them all, and put down your nomination from what you think is the best game. I believe there is a shortlist up, but if not, you just chuck your own game in there. The date for closing is November the 27th, so you've got about 2-3 weeks. So go check that out. There's a little link on the front page of PG at the moment. Make your voice heard. It's well worth it.
Can we vote for that?
I think that might be cheating, but we do get to look at the results, and obviously we get to put them in the correct order. We get to count, basically. That's our job.
Hooray!
Hey, so you listeners go out and do the fun stuff. So, what's happened in the last few weeks? Well, Supercell, one of the most successful mobile creators in the space, of course, them of Clash of Clans and Clash Royale and all the rest of it, recently Brawl Stars, which launched, they had a game called Rush Wars, which was in the works. They'd released a beta, and they had differed slightly from their usual format, because they had their little sort of online real-time MOBA thing, which was Clash Royale. They had their, I guess, what they call strategy light Clash of Clans. And this was an RTS, a proper actual real-time strategy game. And they did a beta. They got a bunch of feedback from the beta. They made some adjustments to dynamics. They had received some information saying it was a bit repetitive and maybe wasn't quite good. They did a few updates. However, it's now been cancelled. Their explanation for this is that the changes that they made didn't help the game long term or change the style enough to make it as fun as they would like it. That's their reasoning. So as a result, it's not happening anymore.
No, and interesting. You know, I think the data behind it, you maybe would suggest that maybe we'll continue with it. Sensor Tower data showed it was downloaded 393,000 times. Mm-hmm. It generated about 312,000 in revenue. And that was about 80 cents per download it worked out at. Okay. And obviously this is still just in soft launch.
Yeah, just a little beta that a few people were testing out. And that it gives you some sense of the scale at which Supercell as a developer works. Because for them, they're obviously raking in literally millions, you know, per month, per day probably, from these two huge properties. So for them, this kind of revenue isn't really... It's basically small change to them, even in beta stage. And for them, they need to make sure it's really worth their time to release it and then support it. Because the problem with these games, and the benefit as well from their perspective, is these are all live ops. Everything is live ops now. It's not a case of releasing the game going, there we go, on to the next game, and occasionally doing a bit of DLC. This is all these games need to be managed by a very big team every day, constantly adapting, updating, fixing bugs, yada, yada, yada. And so they need to justify that expense. And this one didn't, apparently. So Brawl Stars still going. This one, yeah, not happening. Which is a bit of a shame, because the RTS genre I really like on mobile. I think it works well. And I'm, I guess, surprised that they couldn't make this work, given their team and their expertise and all the rest of it.
No, they might morph it into some other game as well in the future, we might see.
Yeah, perhaps, perhaps. And maybe the thing with the RTS is a slightly more demanding genre of game. And yeah, maybe they were scared it wasn't going to reach the audience they wanted to make it super profitable. The thing about something like Clash Royale is you can get super deep into it and get into the meta and all that. Or, you know, the average person can pick it up and just drop some people onto the thing and watch them walk up the screen and go, oh yeah, it's a fun little game. Mm-hmm. RTS is a bit more in depth than if they're... It looked kind of Advance Wars-y, which is why I was like, oh, this could be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I miss Advance Wars.
Yeah. And then I was like, ah, it's not happening. Oh, well. So just a heads up, if you were enjoying the beta, then enjoy no more. Another little bit of news that we got. So BlizzCon 2019 happened. In fact, Blizzard's been in the news for several reasons over the past month, which we should probably touch on. First thing we'll talk about is Diablo Immortal, which was the new Diablo game that got announced at some time earlier in the year. And everyone went, a new Diablo game? Yeah. Mobile game? Oh, where's the downvote button?
Yeah, it was last year at BlizzCon 2018 where we had the infamous question from the audience member. When he was like, is this some kind of joke? And then that all went viral. And
Can't believe that was a year ago. My God. So we've got some actual footage of gameplay now. Before it was just an announcement. And now there's a video up right now where you can see about 2.5 minutes of actual gameplay of the game running. And purely based on the visual, the look and everything, looks great. As in, it looks just like your Diablo.
It does.
Prettier,
yeah,
even.
It looks like they've moved it seamlessly across. It looks, as you say, it's just Diablo on mobile.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting to see if they do anything to change it up a little bit, or if it's just going to be the exact same experience, which I don't know if that is that what the audience wants from response? Maybe not.
See, my prediction for all of this, and this hasn't, I don't think, been confirmed necessarily, but... this is going to be free to play. This is going to be speeding up stuff with in-app payments. This is going to be all the stuff you would usually expect from a mobile game. And it's going to make people very angry and say that it's the death of the franchise and all the rest of it. That will happen. Then it will make loads of money, probably. And so, which is pretty much how these things work out. This is what happens. It's interesting to look at the video that we've got on the site because there's no UI at all in this video. I'm assuming that there will be in the final product because I'm expecting to see gems, three types of currency across the top of the screen and, you know, all that business. But I think this kind of game lends itself very well to mobile. It always has, these little looter hack and slash games, because by their essence, they're grindy. These are grindy games, full stop. And that is one of the things people always accuse mobile games of being very grindy, doing the same thing over and over again. And it's like, well, that's Diablo, man. That's perfect for mobile. I reckon they'll just shorten the size of the maps. They'll limit things off. They'll split it into chapters. They'll make it a little bit more bite-sized.
Smaller bursts.
Yeah, smaller bursts. But it will 100% be free to play and people will be cross about it. So nothing we can do about that. But you can pre-register on Google Play at the minute. I think you can also do it on the App Store.
I think you can, yeah. There's no release date at the minute, is that right?
No, not that I can see. You can just basically sign up on the official site as well if you want to get an update when it appears. But the good stuff that we're seeing is it's got lots of familiar locations. You've got Wartham, you've got Darkwood, you've got Tomoe Mountain, and the Demon Hunter class is the one that they're using in the video, dual crossbows and all that business. So I think they're obviously trying to appeal to the hardcore. They're going to get pushback from it no matter what, because you know it's going to upset people. But
yeah, and they've got more issues than this game, to be honest.
That's
now.
True. So this bridges over into our sort of influencer.biz, which a site that Danielle runs, where she talks about a lot to do with, you know, online YouTubers, streaming, esports, all that kind of business. And the same thing with our PC-based site as well. But yeah, this has been through the ringer a little bit here, and not undeservedly so. So the primary issue that they had, or at least the thing that caught the headlines, was the fact that they banned a player, didn't they?
They did, a Hearthstone player.
Who I think they won a tournament, or at least placed within a tournament. And then during their acceptance speech, they made a statement in relation to the protests that are currently going on in China. And we're currently going on in Hong Kong. Well, actually, we visited for PG.biz. They closed down the airport the day or so after we left. So we narrowly missed being stuck there. The problem that happened here was the winner in question made a statement basically pledging support for the protests.
Yes, Free Hong Kong was right. The statement from Plich Chung Wai. So I apologize if I butchered that.
It's okay. I would do no better. Upon hearing that statement, Blizzard decided to effectively... Did they outright ban him as well as remove the winning money, or...?
Yes, from my understanding.
Yeah. And a lot of people went, I'm sorry, what? Like, he said something which a lot of people around the world are sort of saying, and it's not a necessarily unreasonable statement to make, given what the conflict is about over there in Hong Kong. And... people thought that Blizzard had maybe done this for reasons being like they have a lot of players in Hong Kong and China, and you know, a lot of people play things like Overwatch and stuff like that, and they maybe didn't want to annoy China at large.
Political move.
Now, their explanation for it was, look, the person in question had made a political statement. And we don't allow any political statements. Our platform is not for that. If they had said, I support the Hong Kong riots, or equally if they'd stood up and said, I don't support the Hong Kong riots, each statement would have been equally wrong and we would have performed the same action. That was their initial statement. A lot of people thought that statement was weak. And then they released another one, which looked like they were sort of backpedaling, but kind of wasn't. They've basically sort of stuck to their guns. Now, did they reinstate the money?
I believe so, yeah. I think they've decided to give some of the money back. I'm not sure if Wai has rejected that now.
Oh, really? Oh, that would be a bold move. I haven't followed it as closely as other stuff. It was just going on in the background amongst other things. But we've got a bit of a problem at the moment where... Well, not a problem so much as it is a trend for large companies refusing to acknowledge that anything they do, either within their own games or people linked to their games on their platform, has anything to do with politics whatsoever. And I know that this is one of those hot button issues where everyone says, get politics out of my games and, you know. But unfortunately, these things are intertwined whether you like it or not. Everything you do every day is political in some regard. Sorry, that's how the world works. So suck it up. And in this instance, we've got, you know, Ubisoft kind of constantly refusing to go on the record. They've got the new Watch Dogs coming out, which is set in London and is this massive post-dystopian thing where it's Big Brother and it's surveillance state and it's, you know, post-Brexit almost. And everyone's going, wow, you know, you've really leaned into this. You're saying stuff about the surveillance state. And they're going, no, it's got nothing to do with that. You're like, but, I mean, what? That's your whole setting for the game. Like, what are you talking about? No. What are you, coincidence. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's like, come on, guys. Like, it's obvious, no?
The same with Modern Warfare as well.
Yeah.
Recently.
Because they're worried that, you know, if you make any kind of statement one way or the other, you risk alienating half the audience. So it's pure business. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, then don't make the game obviously be saying something. Or making a, it is, whether you like it or not, making a bit of a statement. So it seems very disingenuous to take this kind of approach. Now, certainly Blizzard aren't making a statement either way with something like Overwatch, but the players or this guy winning something and saying, woo, I also, yay, you know, support to the Hong Kong protests and then getting banned effectively or shut down. It's like, oh, wow, bleak. Which dovetails into that other guy getting banned by. Oh, who was it? Who's the guy who... And it's a really cruel thing, but it is funny. Sorry. The screen capture of the dude, like, mid-crying because
oh,
he...
Oh, the Fortnite player.
Fortnite, that's it, yeah. Because he was using cheats, auto-fire cheats and stuff in a stream.
Yeah, Autobot or whatever. That's it. Aimbot. Yeah. That's it. Autobots, Transformers.
And he was... I've got that mod. But yes, using Aimbot during apparently a game that wasn't live and he wasn't playing against real people and he was just doing it for the streamers and Fortnite went, yeah, lol, banned for life.
Because he was a professional esports player as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing, it's just a bigger issue outside of games with Blizzard and everything, and it's not great. You know, what Blizzard have said, their actions, it seems to just be getting out of control. You know, they even banned the casters. There was a couple of, I think it was only one actually, a commentator who, I think he was the one that was interviewing him after they banned him as well.
Okay.
It just the whole thing seems to get out of hand. And then they've had BlizzCon 2019, and then they've had Overwatch, they've sort of announced the likes of Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4 to try and overshadow these issues. And hopefully, you know, make it all go away, which, it doesn't. It needs to continue, you know. It needs sorting. It's a broader issue and it needs, you know, as I was saying, looking at.
And, yeah, I understand that even people listening to this right now, there's going to be a bunch of people going, oh, my God, I can't believe you're talking about this. Ugh. And I sympathise to a small degree, but what I said earlier is genuinely true. Like, everything that you consume, everything that you make has been made by someone, published by a company, monetized in a certain way. And all of these decisions, every single step of the way, there has been politics involved in that decision to get to the place where it is now. So the idea that of like, just keep politics out of my games, these things just materialize out of nowhere with no mechanism in place and no massive corporations funding it. Like, no, that's not how it works.
No.
Everything is political. And stuff like this, when this happens, just shows you how political these supposedly non-political companies are. And they are making a statement, whether it's saying shutting this kind of talk down or supporting it. Either one is a statement. It's all political. There's no escape from it. And the sooner everyone kind of gets that and goes, okay, cool, and you know, just understands that this is going to be simmering away in the background of everything, then you won't freak out so much and get so annoyed. But it's not a bad thing because this stuff impacts the way that you consume games. In-app purchases, the existence of in-app purchases or otherwise is political because there is an element at work there where they're trying to understand how do you make the most money from something to keep my company funded, to keep these shareholders happy, which demand a certain thing because they have a certain ideology on the outlook of life, be that right or left, which focuses their intentions towards the acquisition of massive amounts of wealth rather than, say, the distribution of wealth to everybody. Like, all of it. All of it's political. So, you know.
Welcome to the Pocket Politics Podcast.
Yes. Vive la Revolution.
But just to briefly correct ourselves from earlier, Chung Wai wasn't actually given the money back from what I've read up. He's actually got a reduced ban. So it was 12 months initially and it was put back to 6 months.
Oh, I knew there was some concession. But all right, cool. Thank you for checking that and fact-checking our falsehoods. Good to know. And Overwatch 2, very interesting, because of course Overwatch found its way onto the Switch.
It did.
And that's been reviewed over on PG. I'm not an Overwatch player, but I understand people were broadly happy with it with a few caveats. So we gave it 7. Dave Aubrey reviewed it and said that it's polished, it looks great, it plays well, it's let down by loot box mechanics.
Oof.
Yeah. And a lack of decent progression or reward system. So they have made some changes during the port, which is a bit of a shame. And it's super smooth, but, you know, you have the issue where it's always online. So a portable game, which you might be playing on a bus, on, you know, on a Switch or on a train.
I was going to say on the Switch as well.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those games you have to play in your house. So it's not quite, it sort of defeats the object of portable a little bit, but, you know, you can play it, it's smooth and it's great, but beware of those issues. Read the review for the full information over there.
The thing is about Overwatch, which I actually love more than the actual game, is the, have you seen the little movies they put out? The little, like, 15-minute, like, little short movies. They're fantastic. They're huge. Like, the quality-wise is amazing.
Well, this is similar to what they used to do for Team Fortress 2. They do loads when that was the premiere, like, online shooter. They did little cinematics with all the individual characters, and they were very good and, you know, fun and witty and whatnot. And they've continued in the same vein. I also enjoyed, in the wake of the China event, them making lots of memes of the characters supporting Hong Kong. That made me laugh. But yes, go check that out on Switch if you want to. Now, going on to, let's do some Nintendo. So Mario Kart Tour, it's been out for a couple of months now. At least
about a month and a half, I think.
Okay, fine. And people are broadly quite down on it,
but downloads wise, it is doing extraordinarily good. It's 124 million within its first month, which is the second largest launch month ever on mobile.
Wow.
Only beaten by Call of Duty, which just launched last month as well, funny enough.
Yeah. So we've had the two. I'm not sure. We've talked a little bit about it, but not a lot, Call of Duty. But yeah, that's insane. And we covered the issues of it during the week of launch. So we talked about the fact that sort of initially it feels like Mario Kart. It looks like Mario Kart. But we were very puzzled and put off by this whole Gold Pass, £4.99 a month subscription to get just a couple of bonuses. So that was what you'd have to pay in order to get the 200cc class of races, and we were a bit like, really? And obviously it's gacha fueled and all the rest of it. However, we've got information about maybe why you'd want to have that $4.99 a month. They are doing a multiplayer beta test in December, so at the moment they've just been using bot races, and there's also been a little bit of kickback online from the way that they've done the bots to make people maybe think they're racing real players.
Very strange,
because they use player names. And that's what when I initially downloaded it the first time, you're like, oh, these aren't, like, you know, just standard stock character names. These are clearly names that other people have written. So maybe I am playing real people, but no, you weren't. It was just using ghosts of characters and stuff like that. So the real multiplayer live is going to start in December in a beta, but only for Gold Pass subscribers. You guys?
Yay. No, this is not good. Like, this is such a strange, weird decision made by, you know, I know it's a beta, but yeah, very, very, you know, it's how to isolate more people already against this game.
Yeah, well, the thing is, betas often operate with small groups, so you'll often have limited numbers of people who can sign up for a beta, and then they close it. Sometimes they'll do open betas where everyone can get involved, but, you know, maybe they wanted that and this is just a good way of selecting people. I'd also perhaps argue that because they are the premium inverted commas customers, it might change the nature of the feedback, because if you're paying for something, you're a Gold Pass person, you really like this game. So either that's going to result in people being more demanding or more sympathetic towards the results. I'm not sure. It could go either way.
Are you still playing Mario Kart?
Nope.
No, neither have I.
The more I played it, the more I felt like, certainly near the beginning, like, you can't lose.
No.
There's no challenge to it. And it initially does a very good job of making you feel like this is Mario Kart. But we people did some tests where they just started the game and then didn't touch it. Character was like bouncing off the side of the track all the way around, and they won. And they won again, and they won again. And it was like, you can't lose at the beginning. And then I assume it hits a point where it's like, actually, now you're going to lose, and now you need to start paying more money.
Yeah, it's a shame. Like, if anybody's listened to this podcast when I've been on, you know, I'm one of the biggest Nintendo fans going, and I just have no interest in this game. I spent a fair amount of time with it when it came out, and I left it, and I think it was on one of my flights coming back. I just loaded it up again.
Mm-hmm.
Just thought I'd have a go. And it was weird. I unlocked two of the highest premium characters straight off. Like,
really?
you know, one of the, you know, gacha mechanics.
Yeah.
The warp pipe, yeah. I got, it was Pauline and Mario, but he was in like a New York outfit.
Okay.
And I was having a look, and like, they're two of the rarest ones. I was like, that's really weird. Is that because I've left and come back? Is there something in that? To, like...
I wouldn't be surprised. That's 100% a come back, please. Look here, have good stuff.
Exactly, yeah. But no dice from me.
No, psychological mind games. I'm not into it. So yeah, it's been a bit of a disappointment. As you say, download figures are astonishing, and I guarantee it's making them a ton of money.
Well, actually, you say that.
Oh, really?
So it's making a loss, yes, but not as much as you'd think. It's generated apparently close to 37 million. But mm-hmm. you compare that to a lot of its other titles. So Pokemon Go, obviously, there's nothing that touches that.
Yeah.
But Dragalia Lost, for example,
mm-hmm.
that's making a lot more per player. So the average revenue spend for Mario Kart is about 26 cents.
Mm-hmm.
But for Dragalia Lost, it was at $16.50.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's really something. Okay. Dragalia Lost has been a really interesting little success for them, because that's the one non-legacy IP that they've released. So it's their first original launch. You know, there's no Dragalia Lost game on, you know, SNES or whatever. And it's been a real little success for them. Slow burner.
Yeah, and it had the least amount of downloads in the first month. Only 1.5 million.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that's incredible. Compared to 124, wherever they're at now, million for this. That's wild.
Mm.
Well, I don't think it's going to be switched off anytime soon. They won't be cancelling this one. But I'd be interested to see what happens when the multiplayer goes properly live and you can start playing other people. For me, that's when the game should come to life a bit. Because I don't care about the career mode so much as the whole point of Mario Kart is playing with your mates.
Absolutely.
That's what it's all about. If they can get that right, then that suddenly makes it a much more attractive proposition, and you can hopefully ignore all the gacha stuff. But then there might be the problem of finding yourself outclassed in races because other people have more stuff, have more gear, have better equipment than you. And then, hey, maybe just pay a little bit for more, and then we're into a problem. But we'll check back when it goes properly multiplayer.
And then we'll be throwing blue shells at one another on the finish line.
Don't you dare. Out and about this month, let's say, we'll mention the big games that appeared, some of which I played, some of which I haven't. So Gwent, the Witcher card game, came out about a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago. It was in beta for a while. It's now out on iOS only. This is the game that was a part of the Witcher 3 game. So you could play Gwent in taverns and with randos as you wandered around. And now they've released it as a separate game. It was out on PC. It's been out there for at least a year or two. And when they originally announced that, you're like, oh, they've got to bring this to mobile, surely. And they 100% have. So three rounds, you get loads of different options and strategies when to play certain cards. You can play cards in your hand that don't have mana restrictions. That basically means you can start the game with the most powerful unit you want, Bosch straight down there. The good thing that they've done here is that if you're already playing Gwent on, for example, a PC or whatever, you can bring your progress over to the iOS version.
That's pretty good.
That doesn't apply for Xbox One or PS4, though.
Too good to be true.
Yeah. So if you've already played it on in the game itself, in The Witcher 3, or you've been playing the solo ones, this is now free to play on the App Store. Haven't played it myself, though I have played Gwent in The Witcher 3. It's quite good fun. So maybe give that a look, especially if you're an aficionado.
Mm-hmm.
What else did we get? Layers of Fear came over to iOS. This was a couple of weeks ago. Now, this is Blooper Team. Blooper These are the guys who, the most recent game they launched, I think, was the Blair Witch Project one.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Survival horror. And Layers of Fear was there. It's a very, like, arty, explorative horror game. First person, where you're wandering around an old mansion, and it is the house of a painter. And this is one that's, the world is constantly changing and warping around you. I played through this on PS4 and liked it quite a lot, though it has its weaknesses. It's got a lot going for it. So the way this works is you walking into a room and seeing a painting and approaching it, and suddenly the painting starts to melt or warp or transform into something else, and you're like, ugh, and the lights flicker and you go, crap. And so you turn around to go to the door, but the door's not there anymore. It's just a wall. And you're like, oh, crap. And then you turn around and the painting's gone. And now there are three doors in the room where previously there were just one, and the entire layout's changed. You're like, oh, God, what's going on? And that's the way this one works. If you played Control recently on PS4.
I did.
You did. So,
I remembered it.
The idea... So pleased. that game plays with a lot of moving geometry and changing architecture. That's a game where you walk into a room and suddenly the room changes around you, and it's, you know, constantly shifting to mess with you. This game does that, but in a period ye oldie setting. It's pretty good. Gets a bit repetitive for me towards the later points, but a lot going for it. And this is an iOS release, £9.99. The criticism I've heard of this one is that the controls are a bit woolly.
Mm.
So beware of that going in. But I'm sure this is something that could be addressed in an update, which hopefully they'll do.
Did you think it was worth the price?
I haven't played the iOS version.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm going by. Some people in the office have, and they've said, yes, it's iffy controls compared to the other version. But it's not like it's a combat game. It's pure exploration. It's like a Gone Home or something. So it seems to me they could do some tweaks and get this working just fine. But we'll see. And I do have that Blair Witch game downloaded. I kind of want to give that a go. That's another sort of 7 out of 10 type deal. And this is a 7 or 8 out of 10 for me originally.
Which is never a bad thing.
No. Some of the best games are 7 out of 10, which seems Absolutely. Weird to say, but they genuinely are. There's also a Switch port of this if you fancy giving it a go, but yeah, iOS at the moment. Let's do some Nintendo stuff. So you, one of the big releases that's been going on the past month, you've played Luigi's Mansion 3.
I have, and I've finished it.
Have you platinum it?
I would if I could. It's not a thing, yeah, on Switch.
All right.
They have little achievements that pop up now and then, but I don't even know where to find them. Like, that's how little of investment I have with, like, platinuming on
Nintendo
Switch.
Nintendo Chivos, okay.
Yeah.
I've heard nothing but lovely stuff about this.
Oh, my God, it's fantastic. You know, it's Nintendo... At the best, it's utterly charming, it's gorgeously designed, you know, both graphically and, you know, through the puzzles, and to you know, the little dialogues you get from Luigi, you know, and everything going around, you know, the classic Mario, Mario, you know, from the original Luigi's Mansion, everything. That all makes a lovely return. It's just delightful. So the game is set this time in a hotel.
Okay.
So it's technically not a mansion, and it's Luigi, Mario, Peach, and a trio of Toads get invited to the hotel by a mysterious lady called Helen Gravely, I think it was. Gravely? Pronunciation, not my strong point.
A hilarious pun, either way.
And then it all goes to... I don't want to swear. Yeah, it all goes...
It goes to hell.
It goes to hell. There we go. And yes, King Boo captures Mario, Peach, and the Toads, and it's up to Luigi to rescue his friends once again, and a brother, obviously. Every level is set on a different floor of the hotel, and
Lovely.
It's like there's always like a little boss or something, and it's working your way through it, and at the end of the boss, you get like a elevator button. Then takes you up and you continue and continue and continue. It's the same game, but they've added little elements to it, changed it up. The biggest of which is Gooigi. I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh my, no. Has he got a spooky alternative character or something?
So he's a slime version of Luigi.
Oh, he is, awesome.
So that Professor Egad, who created the Poltergeist 3000. I don't think this one's called the 3000. It's a new update, but that's the Hoover, basically.
Yeah, because the for anyone who has never played the game, it's him going around like capturing ghosts with this suction Hoover thing. So
that's
think
right.
the Ghostbusters kind of proton pack, but yeah. it's just like sucking ghosts and then throwing them around the place, isn't it? Smashing them off walls.
Oh my god, it's so satisfying. Yeah, you basically you spotlight. You've got the flashlight. You spotlight that on enemies that shocks them, and then you suck them up essentially.
Nice.
Obviously, there's little different tricks to each one, but that's the core component. And Guiji is a new element that they've brought in, and he hides in your vacuum pack until you need him, and then you, with the control stick, you pop him out, and then Luigi, like, basically falls to sleep.
Okay.
And Guiji,
it's like a spirit projection thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, so like Guiji...
He can get to other areas that Luigi can't.
Yeah, so his self goes into Guiji and you control Guiji and you can walk through like metal bars and stuff and grates on the floor, places Luigi couldn't access.
Because he is just a spectral gloopy form, so he can pass through.
Exactly. Okay. So yeah, it's a really clever dynamic between the two. They there's some really clever puzzles. So it's a 12-hour game. That's how long it took me to finish it. For the most part, it is solid. I do think there is about 2 to 3 hours of filler in there.
Okay.
Where you know you're going back on yourself or just stuff where it's like, do we need this? If the game was 9 hours or even just 10, mm-hmm. it would have been perfect from start to end, and I could see myself replaying this more often. Like the original Luigi's Mansion, for instance, I can finish that game in probably about 4 hours.
I thought that was quite a short one, yeah.
Yeah, but I play that probably once a year, just because it is a great little, you know, four-hour burst, and it's solid start to end. But again, it is a fantastic game. It's absolutely worth your time, and if you love Nintendo and Luigi and even Guiji, give it a try.
It looks lovely, and those games have always appealed. I played a bit of the first one, actually, on a borrowed GameCube, wasn't it, originally, the game? That was where the first one landed.
That's right.
I think. But they are always charming as hell. I even had to go on the 3DS port that they did.
Dark Moon, yeah. Oh, sorry, the actual first game.
When they brought it over. But no, these look charming as hell. So that's available right now, and we're taking your comments as a review, and it's glowing. So that's cracking. That's going to be great fun. Minecraft Earth, it's out, kind of. I don't know if it's technically this is early release or soft launch or whatever, but I think it's properly out. And Minecraft Earth, if you're not familiar, is there... AR Pokemon Go. This is their Harry Potter, Hogwarts, whatever it is, Wizards Unite,
yeah, which...
That's jazz.
That's still sort of about...
Yeah, and I downloaded this and went to have a go, and my God, is it exactly the same as those games initially. I didn't get onto the bit, which is supposed to be interesting, because it asked me to leave my house. And I was like, I can't actually leave now, I'm doing work. But I was able to collect a couple of things.
Go outside.
But, you know, but the first thing it did was like, you know, you're on the map again. You're on that map that you've seen from Pokemon Go and all the rest of it. And it's like, go and walk and collect a couple of things. And I was like, they were just within range of my house. I can move around a bit and go, okay, I've grabbed that. I've got a couple of things. I've got a cow. Obviously, it's all presented in the pixel art, blocky Minecraft look. And collected those bits, picked them up, and then it was like, go over here and activate this event. And I was like, dude, that's like half a mile away. No. So I understand what the good stuff of this game is, and I saw it in the previews and when they showed it at the Apple, you know, iPhone announcement stuff, is building structures in AR, so you being able to walk around so a table, for example, and you're placing blocks down, and then you can just start creating your structures in full 3D and moving around and, you know, selecting, you know, seeing it from every possible angle and popping stuff in, and that's the fun, cool bit of it, which I haven't had a go on yet. So this is free to download Google Play and the App Store right now. It does require you to have the AR stuff available on your device, though. And I know that only works if you've got, for example, a certain device. So you can't do it on like an iPhone 4S. You need a certain operating system. You need to be above like, I don't know, 7 or 8 or something like that on iOS. I don't know what it is on Android, though.
Do you think there's been much fanfare around this? Because I'll be honest, I didn't realise it was out.
Well, yeah, arguably not. We got alerted to it in the chat because we're obviously looking for this kind of thing because it's sort of our job. But the fanfare was, I guess, it being shown at the iOS, you know, launch announcement stuff. Mm. So when Apple selected it to be an on-stage thing, people were like, wow. that's a big push. But at the same time, I think maybe we've got a situation here where the truly successful AR game is still really Pokemon Go, even after the launch of Harry Potter Wizards Unite. And perhaps you know more about the figures on that than I do. But I feel like that came and went a little bit.
Seems to. I mean, Pokemon Go's doing better now than it did in its second year. That's wow. The crazy thing. It's already it's actually on course to beat its, I think, its first year revenue. It can nearly, if it continues with how it's going, it's going to beat what it did in its first year, which is just absolutely crazy to think.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that there was a fairly lukewarmish response to the Harry Potter one. And we've had several, you know, come out. There was a Ghostbusters one at one point. There's been a lot of people who've dipped their toe into the AR waters, and none of them have really come close. And it doesn't mean that every single one of them has to be a Pokemon Go. They just need a level of success. And you know what? Minecraft is so big that I imagine that they will get a layer of success. But this one is really using the AR tech in a way that AR should be used, in my opinion. Pokemon Go is just a novelty of wandering around and then aiming your phone at the Pokemon. And you can do it without the AR. Like, you can have them, you know, if you don't want to use up your phone's battery, you can just switch it so it's just a generic background. And you just go, capture a Pokemon. Whereas this, beyond the location stuff, this introduces the, hey, you can wander around your table, you can look at structures in full 3D, and you can start building in that way. That's a proper AR game. Similar to Elysium Skies, and which is the one I always reference, which really makes use of, like, you have to wander around the room in order to play it. You have to look at it from all angles. You can't just stand there and, you know, just point your phone at something. Whether that is something everyone gets on board with and finds really fun and, wow, building Lego in 3D, amazing, or whether everyone's like, yeah, can't be asked, I would just rather do this in the base game, you know, with mouse and keyboard or controller. That's the question. And I still think AR is a little bit niche. So yes. I don't necessarily think it will get insane. But, you know, Minecraft is one of the biggest properties on the planet. If anyone can pull it off, they can. So that's available right now, brand new, both Android and iOS, if you want to give it a look. I'm going to mention a couple of games I've played over the month before I left. So you might remember, back when they were originally announcing Apple Arcade, one of the games they used to sort of plug the possibilities of it was a game called Where Cards Fall.
Yes, I remember this.
Yeah, which was really interesting to me because it was an isometric, I guess, platformer or exploration game where you're moving around a very, very pretty chill zen world. And one of the methods for traversal, or the way that you would, for example, cover gaps, instead of building a bridge or something like that, you'd find yourself on top of a platform trying to get to another and there'd be a gap, but you'd notice there'd be like a rectangle on the floor. And that rectangle is actually a stack of cards. And what you would do in order to create yourself a bridge is you put your two fingers onto the card and then you pinch outwards. And those cards will flurry and expand and flutter and suddenly, and they will form a structure. They'll form like a house or a box. And that box will be the same height as the platform you're standing on. And you can actually use it as like a bridge. And then you can put your fingers back on that box and you can pinch the other way, pinch your fingers together, and it'll all flutter down and go flat again. And that's the core mechanic of the game. And these stacks of cards can be used as bridges, they can be actual houses or buildings that you create. And importantly, when they're in their flat state, when there's just like one card visible on the ground, you can put your finger on it and move it around the map. And that's how you start to traverse the world, by sort of creating a bridge, crossing over to another platform, then deconstructing that bridge to one card, dragging it to another place, reconstructing it again. And then you'll get all these variables where some cards, depending on the number of cards in the stack, you can make it different sizes. So you can pull your fingers out really slowly and it'll go poof and there are 5 cards visible. And then if you pull out again, there'll be like, you know, 12 cards visible and keep going and going.
So it's a puzzler.
Yeah, it's really nice. I've played about the first, like, maybe 3 levels of it. I spent about an hour and a half. It does expand on the ideas. It does start to bring in, you know, new wrinkles and challenges. And they're broken up by these very small story-esque bits where you're sitting in a room and you're talking to your parents in Sims chat. And that kind of boo-boo-ba-ba-boo. But it's a very nice, relaxing game. This isn't a high-speed thing. It's a contemplative puzzler with beautiful art style and all the rest of it. We've got a lot of those on iOS, but I really like it. And this falls under the Apple Arcade cap of a very premium feeling game which is about narrative and an exploration and not about IAPs. So I would recommend having a look at that. I haven't completed it, but it's got a lot of promise. Manifold Gardens, another weird one. Have you seen this?
I haven't. No, tell me more.
It's proper weird. So first person game in which you're wandering around an incredibly lo-fi, low-poly environment. And this is one about gravity. You're trying to open doors using blocks. So there is maybe a yellow door and there's a line on the floor where, and a little square at the end of it. And you need to find a yellow block to pop it on that little square at the end. And then boom, the line will light up yellow all the way to the door. Door opens. And you're like, cool, I get this game. And then you wander into another place. You wander down a corridor and you see the door is now on the wall. And the block that you need to push onto is on the ceiling. Right, okay. So you approach the wall and then a little hexagon appears. Hexagon. I always get my hexagons and pentagons confused. As you approach the wall, which is a different color, and then you tap it and you'll go vroom, and you will start walking up the wall. And you realize each surface, each of the four surfaces, the two walls and the ceiling and the floor, have a different color assigned to them. So you need to navigate this world constantly switching the gravity and maneuvering blocks which can only be placed on certain surfaces. So blue blocks might only work on the wall, on the right-hand wall. So you need to go and activate that. But then when you place the block in the right place to open the door, the blue line that connects to the door goes all the way around the room, and the actual door is on the ceiling now. So you have to wander all the way around to the ceiling, switch gravity to get to the door and get through it. As you can imagine, it starts getting quite disorientating.
Mm.
And because it's very, very low-fi and low-poly, the walls are just block surfaces, block colors. There is glass everywhere, and you realize when you're inside these structures, there's an outside. And the outside is all these floating platforms and all these other towers. And you're like, whoa. When you get out there, it's quite kind of dizzying. And you can see me playing it over on the PG channel. And I couldn't see any other way off this platform other than to just take a running jump and then fall for about a mile. And I was like, this is probably going to kill me. I'll end the video like this. Here we go. Cowabunga. Woo! Jumped off. And I landed and everything was fine. And it's like, right, so you can kind of fall for eternity in this thing and it's okay. So gravity doesn't kill you, which is sort of in keeping with the way this thing works. So big, weird, unusual, experimental puzzler has a very melancholy vibe to it again. I enjoyed it. I played more after I saw the video. I still don't quite know what the end game is, but I like weird. It has a slightly Portal, you know, puzzler test room vibe to it. Like you're being experimented on. You're a rat in a maze. Quite like that. So Manifold Gardens, the name of that one. That's another Apple Arcade one. Played Shock Rods. Seen this?
No, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It's really out the loop with mobile at the minute.
It's kind of a, I guess it's an Overwatch or I guess COD style shooter, but you are a vehicle, like a 4x4 futuristic four-wheeled vehicle. But you can still strafe because they've got funny little rollers on the wheels, which mean you can go sideways. Looks a bit weird. This is the least polished Apple Arcade game I've played.
Oof.
Because they've always been a pretty high standard. So, you know, the ones that I played up until now have been pretty good. This one felt the roughest. It's not to say it's got no value in it. It's very, very fast-paced. And when you're in the middle of the combat, you can get moments of like, oh, this is actually quite exciting. And you're just strafing around and shooting other players. Real time multiplayer again, but like with Mario Kart, pretty much positive I was just playing bots, so please do
not
better.
As exciting.
Yeah, not as exciting, but the visuals are rough, the frame rate's really bad, so this is the one where I felt like, oh man, this isn't doing it for me. But Shock Rods is the name of that one.
Oh, I have seen this one.
Have you? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's like an action thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Stainless Games. Are they
is that
made
them?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's them that made them.
Righto. You can by all means check it out, but it was the one I was least impressed with. Had a go with a game called Inmost. That was really nice. So this is a 2D 16-bit style pixel art game. It's a kind of a horror. You take control of three different characters, one of whom's a lassie waking up from her bed, another of whom is like an older man with a beard running around the place. And you have to navigate the environment by doing the usual mixtures of jumps and crawling and collecting and all the rest of it. But each character has their own specific skill. They have three separate storylines, which I believe intertwine later on. And there are these black globule things that the horror seems to come from, these weird creatures. But the world will suddenly start changing around you. There's a great sequence early on where you're playing as the old guy and you're in a cellar and wandering around and climbing down ladders and trying to find a pickaxe in order to hack through something to get out. And then all of a sudden, like, a room constructs itself around you and your guy's thrown across the side of the screen, and all of the bricks that form the wall start to smash and crack and break, and light starts careening through. Then the whole thing explodes, and suddenly you're transported to the top floor of a house, and you're the same character, but you're clearly like an old man now, like a really old man.
Okay.
And it starts flashing up this story he was telling about having happy endings and stuff. And it's like, where am I now? What the hell is going on? So it's playing with narrative and in a really interesting way. And it's almost done in a monochrome style. So it's got this very, it's like almost like black and white, but it keeps shifting the color palette where it's like kind of gray and pink or gray and green. And it's got a really nice mood to it. And it's genuinely beautiful. And I want to play more. I think there's something to it. Inmost is the name of that one. So if you like slow placed exploratory puzzle stuff, worth checking that one out. Definitely for you. COD came out, we talked about that. Do you know how well that's been doing, stat-wise?
Just that it was the biggest mobile launch of all time, I believe. Mm.
Well, I know from playing this one, I felt it was like quite a decent version of it. It did feel quite COD-y.
COD-ish.
And you know what I mean. I immediately found it quite accessible. I didn't find the controls awful, as these things can often be. And in the office, I can tell you, everyone's really enjoying it. Like, Dave's been playing it a lot, and I don't know about Dan, but when I was out in the conference, everyone's, you know, talking games, obviously, and we're all like, who's playing COD? And it's like, everyone was playing COD, and everyone was surprised how decent it was. So it seems pretty promising.
It does. Yeah, and just the stat-wise, I just brought some up. So, yes, so it was the fastest ever mobile game to reach 100 million downloads, and it did it within its launch week.
So, yeah, I'm getting a lot of anecdotal stuff. Everyone's been like, I played it, it's quite good. Like, that's the reaction, that's the sentiment. I think everyone was going, but even on the reactions to the video that I put up, everyone's gone like, this is quite good. It feels quite good.
Definitely a bit of a surprise, I think.
So this looks like it has legs. And now, obviously, they need to service it and add new content and keep it going and keep people happy and interested, because everything's got to run for seasons now with Fortnite starting season 2, I guess.
Well, Call of Duty just seems to be on a high at the minute with Modern Warfare out, and that seems to have blitzed all sales statistics for the year and beating, really? I think it was the biggest Call of Duty on this generation systems, and like, we're at the end.
Well, this is their real cash in, like Battlefield 1 was for Battlefield, where they're like, oh, we're going back to old-fashioned war, we love old-fashioned war. This is their like, hey, after we did Infinite and we went a bit sci-fi and people have been going eh for a while, they're just like, screw it, remember Modern Warfare 4, remember you really liked that, and everyone went woo, Modern Warfare. We're just going to do that again. And we've got the man with the mutton chops back. Because you loved him, didn't you? You shooter nerd.
That's Captain John Price. I'll have you know.
Yeah, whatever. I did actually play this. I'm being sniffy, but I played it's in the original games. I kept up with Call of Duty. But for me, they've always been like a bit of a muchness. And you play it and go, yep, it's another fast military shooter with a short campaign. But I don't play multiplayer. It's not targeted at me. And this feels to me like it's very much like a FIFA thing, which is like there's a certain number of people who will be buying this no matter what. It's always one of the biggest sellers. Everyone buys FIFA again every year. Everyone buys Call of Duty again every year. It's just one of those things. So, of course, it was going to be massive. But also, I think people are saying it's one of the best single-player campaigns they've had for a while. Which is obviously promising if you're into that kind of thing. And COD Mobile seems to be, say, they're both riding high at the moment. So fair play to them. As is the other game that was very big from the past month that we haven't covered, which is the Untitled Goose Game, which was massively successful. And you've played that. And
honk honk, yes.
Did you have a honking good time?
I did. I haven't completed it, but I've spent a good amount of time with it. I played a lot of it in Australia, where it was developed.
Oh, yeah.
It was it was heralded over there. It was the big talking point, which was fantastic to see. Obviously, it's quite a small studio who developed it, and it's done wonders for them and for the industry in Australia. It seems to be, you know, bringing a lot of tension across, which is a good thing.
It's the greatest meme game ever, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. Funny enough, just speaking of Call of Duty, Sledgehammer Games did just open a new studio in Australia, which was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, while I was there. So that's a... So,
them being, we should clarify, one of the Call of Duty people.
Yes.
It was them, and they bounce between them and Treyarch, don't they, back and forth every year.
And Infinity Ward, yes.
Of
they
course,
got three.
Infinity Ward, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So so that was cool. So, yeah, so I've been playing a bit of that. It's just, it is fun. It's just daft, but it's absolutely fun, you know. Just being an annoying goose disrupting these people's lives in this little British town.
What's the most asshole-ish thing that you've done to someone? What's the thing that gave you the most
in the game?
Glee? Yeah.
That is everything you do, though. He's not a very nice goose. I think there's one kid who you keep trapping in a police box.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just keep honking at him, and every time he just runs off in tears and then just hides in it, and you just feel really bad. And then also, it doesn't seem to affect it, but he's standing right near, it's to get into this like electronic shop, but then you can get the goose on the television, and I just feel like just haunting this little kid with this goose just appearing out of his nightmares.
That's good.
My goose is more psychological, I feel like. Taking it to the next level.
Nice. You're a Junji Ito goose, where you're messing with people from a conceptual level.
Exactly.
Rather than just chasing them.
But
I like it.
Yes. So yeah, you're controlling this goose, and it does feel like a goose, which is the crazy thing, you know.
It's got the walk. That walk is wonderful.
It is. The sound design as well. It was cool. I got to watch a little session with the composer who was playing music from the game and everything. At Melbourne Games Week. So that was pretty neat. There's a lot of a puzzle aspect to it, and like puzzle and stealth, I'd say. You're basically stealing stuff from everyone, or trying to get residents to do something to complete a list of checks you have on like a grocery list.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to see it to the end. I don't think it's the longest of games, to be honest, but I mean, it's just, it's crazy how much it's blown up and in the industry, and it's just a nice little story, you know.
No, it's a bottled lightning thing. I'd be interested to see if the thing they do next has anywhere near the kind of sticking of this, because I feel like this is a little once-in-a-lifetime oddity.
Yeah.
It's a mixture of, like, social media combining with a cute, silly idea, and then suddenly you've got this storm. And they've done very well off it, and fair play to them.
That's what I mean. Like, what do they do next? Do they do Untitled Goose Game 2, or do they pick an even more annoying animal?
Yeah, difficult to know. Difficult to come up with the next, like...
Untitled Weasel game.
Yeah. And at which point people go, right, all right, come on. We're being silly now. That's what I feel might happen. But everyone seemed to be very positive about the Silly Goose game, so fair play to them. And before we go, because we need to go, cause it's already been an hour, say something about Smash.
Yay, Smash Brothers, yes. Terry Bogard from Fatal Fury series has been added.
I know him.
Yes, so thank you for indulging me for the minute. The one thing I actually want to mention more than Terry being in the game, which is awesome, and the amount of detail, is so the creator, Masahiro Sakurai, did a direct where he went through basically all the details of Terry and the new stage, which is the King of Fighters, which is apparently from the actual SNK games, Fatal Fury. I don't know if you've played Fatal Fury.
I've played Final Fight. And he's in Final Fight.
Yeah. He's been in a few, hasn't he? I think there's been quite a few.
Yeah, he hops between them.
But the biggest thing to come away from that was Sakurai was talking about all the characters he's added, like in the background, so cameos.
Okay.
So there's people like Geese Howard, King, Blue Mary, Athena, and loads of other people from Japanese fighting games, which I've never heard of, a lot of them. But the one thing that he did, he went, I know a lot of people are looking for Mai Shiranui, again, butchering the name, but unfortunately she won't be appearing. And he says, because Smash Brothers is for good boys and good girls. Unfortunately, the character is too boobalicious.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Which this has been memed to hell now.
Okay, well, yeah, I suppose so. Nintendo's been a little bit more chill about that. They've been we've talked about before, them lifting their what was not really a ban, but you just didn't see a lot of risque games on the eShop. But now there's quite a few of them.
And so, also Bayonetta's in the Smash Brothers game, who is very out there. So, you know.
But Smash is very, you know, family friendly, isn't it? As a franchise.
It is for the most part. Yes, exactly. So.
Fair enough. All right, then. I'm glad you got that out of your system.
Thank you. It's been a long month.
For the for weeks I've been waiting to hear your thoughts. All right, then. We'll knock it on the head there. It's been a bit longer and a bit less amped up than usual, so do excuse me. I'm ill. But I promise we'll be back next week. And my fingers aren't crossed or anything. And we'll continue on for the rest of the year. Because I ain't going nowhere. I've done too much traveling this year. I'm staying put.
That's I ain't it. Leaving.
No, you can't get me away. I'm sitting by this microphone until it's Christmas. Sorry. So thank you for listening. Thank you so much for your patience. And we will catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.